Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the AfriCast. My name is Brendan Lotz, and joining me on Discord today is Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And Robin Chetty.
Hey.
How are you guys doing today?
Fine. Glad it's Friday. Nothing too exciting, you guys?
Yeah, next week's pretty hectic for me.
Yeah, you're actually traveling. We can't say where to yet, but you'll be traveling next week, which is really awesome. Sorry?
I'm going to London for the launch of the Huawei Mate 20.
Oh, so you can mention. Why didn't you tell us this, Robin?
Are you sure you didn't just break a contract there, Robin?
No.
Okay.
I just can't reveal details about the device.
Ah, so you already know about it. That's good. So everybody listening knows where to come for their Huawei, Mate 20.
I know all the things about it.
Awesome. Okay, so we're not going to talk about that first. We're actually going to talk about something else that was released in South Africa this week. The Fitbit Charge, and you were at the launch, Robin.
Yeah, I was at the Mia briefing court yesterday. Not the third one in the range, it's the fourth one in the range. The first one that was brought out was the Fitbit Charge HR, and now, yeah, this is, I guess, the latest iteration. And it was announced a couple of months ago, and now is in the country. So it launched. I was lucky enough to be seated one of the devices to review. I've used it for a good 24 hours now, and it's quite good. A little bit different from its predecessor is that they've changed up the display a bit. The previous one was tap only, whereas this one is a full touch display. It's not obviously going to be as feature rich or as large as it is on, say, the Fitbit Versa, which is a smartwatch, or fitness tracker than smartwatch. But it does have a few kind of smart features. One of the cool things about it is it's able to be running and not running. So it's quite helpful if you perhaps forget to go out of the running mode while you're exercising and you accurate reading in terms of your workout. So some of the other cool features are, well, I wouldn't say battery life is a cool thing, but it's a necessity rather. Fitbit claims about 7 days worth of battery life from the Charge 3. I fully charged it yesterday at about midday. 24 hours later, it's sitting at about 87%.
Yeah. So what's that, 13% over 24 hours?
But that said, I haven't done any massive workout. I haven't gone through like a marathon or anything like that.
So sorry, I'm a little bit of a noob when it comes to these things. So when you're actually like working out, does that use the battery more? I imagine it would, but it's not really something that I ever put two and two together with.
Kind of when you're just sitting at your desk, you're not doing that much stuff, so there's not a lot of information that needs to gather. I would assume that the more you're working out, the larger strain that might put on the battery. But it's something I'll definitely try and see over the next couple of weeks.
So are you going to go for a jog along the Thames while you're in the UK for us, Robin, just to test it?
Only stroll.
Did they announce how much the price is?
There's a little bit, I wouldn't say controversy, but a little change in terms of pricing. When it was initially announced globally, Fitbit had announced a kind of ballpark figures. Launched in the country, the prices have increased slightly. We asked Fitbit about that, and they say they've obviously cited the exchange rate,
yeah,
tax kind of pay that you have to pay on luxury items as a result of it. So the standard model, so the classic edition costs 2,999 rand, and costs 3,499 rand.
Ooh.
And the difference between the two, and that's an NFC chip. Version doesn't have one, and the special edition does have one. And the NFC chip is obviously to facilitate card payments.
Okay. Is that worth that extra price, though? I mean, I'm just thinking about it, like, NFC is something that's kind of baked into smartphones these days. It's almost like an expected thing, especially with, like, mobile payment apps like Apple Pay and Samsung Pay. Like, do you think that extra price or that extra cost is justified, given that it has just an NFC chip in it.
The media did ask them about, like, why is there such a kind of disparity between the two prices. Chip is apparently expensive. We'll have to take their word for that. But they also kind of mentioned that...
Can't you buy, like, a roll of NFC chips for, like, $10?
I don't know.
I'm looking up on Amazon. Excuse the typing NFC chip, because my keyboard is loud as hell. I'll look. Yeah, $10. 8 NFC tags.
Tags. Oh,
that's a tag, not a chip. Okay, yeah. Keep going. I'll try to find it.
Okay, cool. Yeah, so, I mean, I think what they wanted to really do is kind of differentiate the two in terms of... I kind of understand what you're saying, that a lot of kind of flagship phones these days have the NFC built in and they have the ability for you to just tap and pay.
Yeah.
And the 3,000 Rand Classic Edition is a more viable option. Just to say, we have both options for you. If I was... Obviously, I haven't reviewed the charge thing in full yet, but if I was spending my money in towards the 3,000 Rand model as opposed to the 3,500 Rand model, because I've got all those kind of mobile payments on my phone already, I can do all that stuff on that.
Fair enough, but I mean, aren't these... Like, I'm not a user of these. I don't use the Apple Watch. I've never used a Garmin thing. I've never used the Fitbit. But isn't the aim of these things to kind of be... their own device, so you don't have to take your phone with you? Like, isn't that like the ultimate goal with these fitness things? Like, while I'm jogging, or I want to get a sticky bun or something. I don't know what joggers do when they get hungry. But isn't the idea that you could just use your watch instead of running with your phone?
I think they want to try and differentiate between a smart watch and a fitness band.
Ah, okay.
Kind of falls into the fitness band category. I would suspect that perhaps 3 or 4 years down the line, you'll get a fitness band that can do pretty much everything a smartwatch can, with the exception only being the size of the screen on it.
Okay.
Right, so perhaps future Fitbit models will have those kind of more smartwatch features built in. But for now, I think they want to kind of segment.
And make themselves look unique. Cool, so you're going to be reviewing that for the next couple of weeks, so keep an eye on Hypertext for a review from Robin. Anything else you want to add, Robin?
You guys can read my first impressions about the device. It will be up on the site.
Cool. So, Hypertext, on this site, where you're listening to this, or... Yeah, I assume everybody listens to this on the website. Otherwise, they're downloading it and listening to it elsewhere. Hypertext or htxt.co.za. You can find everything we're talking about. And then I'll take the limelight for a bit, because Clinton, you've got like 3 games you want to chat about.
I do.
Last week was Rage, in case anybody didn't notice. And Clinton, you and I were there on the Friday. You were there for most of the day on Friday, and I only came through in the afternoon.
I was there for more than most of it, because I tried to leave at like 4:30.
Yeah.
The traffic was ridiculous, so I just kind of went and chilled out until like 7. And
then gosh.
So I was there for longer than the time you're supposed to be there.
But yeah. So, okay, so what were your impressions of it, Clinton, before I launch into my thoughts? What were your impressions of Rage following Comic-Con?
It was the same Rage that it is every year. They moved some stuff around. The stands were the same people, though. And I don't know what I was expecting, but it's the same thing. I've been going to Rage for, like, I don't know, 10 years. I've been going every single year, even before I was going for work, and it just feels like the same stuff again. So going off to Comic-Con, the only thing I was missing was the panels.
Mm.
Other than that, if you went to Comic-Con, I don't know why you would pay to go to Rage as well, because a lot of the same people were there.
Yeah, so my first impression of Rage 2018 is that there was a lot more space to move, because they moved the LAN to the, I believe it's called the Blue Wing, which is kind of, it's part of the dome, but it's also kind of separate. So it doesn't take up the main circular floor of the dome, which I really appreciated, walking around and having like enough space to avoid people. Was really, really great. But like you say, Clinton, I mean, it's becoming very samey. It's the same people there, the same retailers offering similar discounts to the year before. There's some cosplay, but I tend to agree with you. It's there seem to be something missing. And like for me, I noticed that there was less esports around. I mean, there was the MSI and EVTech stand that was running PUBG and Quake, I think it's Quake Tournament. Yeah, they were running a contest of their own. But there was a notable absence of esports, and I think that's largely due to the fact that the Telcom... Or, sorry, the VS Gaming Masters, which is usually held at Rage, was held at Comic-Con earlier this year. And I think that that presence was really missing. I discussed this with you guys earlier this week, and I said that it, perhaps it's time for Rage to scrap Rush and combine Rush and Rage into one thing so that it's not two separate events. Which has never made sense to me. I get that they want to give esports its own stage, but I think that there's just more eyes on esports at something like Rage than something like Rush, where it's like, okay, cool, if you're a fan of esports, come and come to this special event, rather than, oh, while you're at Rage, maybe check out some esports, which I thought was a really nice touch, because... I mean, esports is this really niche thing that I think, like, just because you game doesn't mean that you are a fan of esports. I think that's very something that we need to make very clear. And when it's in something like Rage, at Rage, rather, not Range, something like Rage, I just feel it's a little bit more accessible. Like, you can be looking at Fortnite, because that dominated the Xbox stage, and see some guys playing like PUBG or CSGO or whatever the esport of the month is, and get interested and maybe want to start up a team or something like that. I just feel that like having Rush separate is a bit of a silly thing, in my opinion, at least.
Yeah. So, and I also said this earlier stage, but Rage and Comic-Con need to lean into what makes them special. Rage has games, or it should be about games, and Comic-Con should be about comics. Mm. And both of them this year tried to do what the other event was doing, which made no sense to me, and is the reason why a lot of people didn't go to both. So I think in the coming years, next year especially, is going to be interesting. Comic-Con needs to bring comic book actors and the artists, and the voice artists and all of that, they need to make that the main attraction, and they need to make sure that whoever they pay for to come here actually arrives, but that's a whole other story. But they need to do that, and then Rage needs to get more video games, and not just stuff that's already out. Mm. Somebody was saying to me, I can't believe I went to the PlayStation stand and it's just like Spider-Man. Spider-Man had been out like a month at that time. They need to have more stuff that's new and has not been released yet to get people coming.
Yeah. Because
I have no idea why people were like lining up to play what one that was there? Like Tomb Raider. Like maybe you haven't bought Tomb Raider, so you're like, oh, I want to give it a try. But Tomb Raider also like came out a few weeks beforehand. You're not giving people a lot of stuff to get excited about. Mm. And then somebody... I think, I don't know who it was. I think it was you, Brendan, but there was a Fallout 76.
Oh, yes, it was me.
And we were so excited. We're like, holy damn, they got Fallout 76. We're going to get to play it. And then it was, and we thought that, like, justifiably, because the stand was, like, so well made. They
and
had
huge.
A lot of decorations. Yeah, it was huge. And you could see it from a mile away. It was blue and white.
There was a Vault Boy, like, with his thumbs out at the front.
Yeah. And then we got there, and all that's in the booth is two TVs and a bench that can fit maybe two people. And it was playing the trailer of the game. And then they had some weird, like, raffle, I don't know what they were doing, where you could put a slip of paper into a glass bowl. And that was the whole stand.
I read a report this week where they said they were giving away pineapple-flavored slushies. I don't know why.
I didn't go, because I walked in, and I was like, oh, no one's playing Fallout. That's so strange. And there were about two people in there watching the trailer, and then I understood, and I left, and I never went back, because I was so angry. And then, like, they were telling people, if you go pre-order Fallout 76 at BT Games for like 800 or 900 rand, then you get a free bottle opener. And I was, that also made me irrationally cool. Angry.
Very take cool.
Take a gamble on this game and that you don't know it's good for almost 1,000 rand. You'll get a flipping bottle opener.
And before everybody shouts at us that it's a Fallout game. It's a multiplayer Fallout game. So we have no idea what the experience is going to be like, even though Bethesda is like, it's going to be just like Fallout. We don't know. Like, yeah.
It's, you should never pre-order anything. In the age where there are literally an unlimited amount of the games, there's no reason to pre-order anymore.
Exactly.
So I don't know.
Rather spend your money on a game that's out now that you want to play. And that segues really nicely into the games you've been playing, Clinton, on the Nintendo Switch. You want to tell us about them?
Two of them. So, the first one that's been out for, I think, 2 weeks now is Super Mario Party. So, it's the new Mario Party, and it's on the Switch. And it's I don't know why I'm saying it like that, because it's a fantastic game. So, the way it uses the Switch is each player gets a single Joy-Con that they hold horizontally. You do hold it the other way sometimes when you do motion control things. And, yeah, you don't need to worry about a lot of controllers because your Nintendo Switch has two built in. So, you already have two players up and going. If you don't have four people, it will auto-fill with AI. You can actually play through a lot of it with just one person. And, yeah, it's Mario Party. I haven't played a Mario Party, like, properly ever. Because it's just something I never got into. And I had an absolute blast with this. It is so much fun. I had my niece and nephew over to play, and they like understood what was going on immediately. I would say that the main Mario Party mode that the game's named after is like a board game with mini games. Mm. And oh, you can get screwed over by RNG so bad in that. And there's like the AI. It's not even the AI being malicious. It just... you can see, like, certain things are random, and then you can just get screwed. Like, if the AI decides one day that you're going to get it, then you're going to get it, and it's almost impossible for you to win. So I would say that was off-putting, but there's actually a new mode called River Survival, I think it was,
mm-hmm.
where instead of being competitive, it's cooperative. So instead of going around a board game, you're going down a river, and you all need to do like a paddling motion with the Joy-Con to go forward or back or sideways. And then you hit balloons to play mini games. And if you win the mini game, you get extra time to get to the end of the level. It's really easy with just two people, which is how I played it, because the AI is basically perfect and they'll never fail the mini games. I think when you have two or three people playing, it will be much more difficult because they need to not stuff up. So that's fantastic. And then there's other modes. You can just play the mini games by themselves if you want to. You don't want to have like a meta game. And then there's something called the Mario-thon. So it's basically a small tournament of mini games that you play online. Now, okay. You may be thinking this game has online, but not really. The Mario-thon is the only part of the game that's online. You cannot play the main mode, Mario Party, online. And that just blows my mind because people have been asking for that feature for years, and they just made Nintendo Switch Online. That's something you have to pay for, and now you can't play that because it doesn't have it. So that's the biggest problem with the game. The only other problems are the fact that not everything's unlocked when you start. I don't know how they did that. A party game isn't something you're putting, you know, like an RPG, you're putting 1,000 hours into it on your own time. You having it, you know, every now and again when people are over.
Yeah.
Because it's definitely not as fun playing on your own. So they should have just had everything unlocked. And then I would have liked it to be more than four players. I think a lot of the, like, the people who picked up Switches early have like 6 Joy-Cons or more lying around. I would have liked to have more players, but I understand the limitations of that. And then the only real bugbear is the fact that in the trailer, they showed off this cool double screen mode where you can actually use 2 Nintendo Joy-Con screens, the like main system, and you can kind of put them next to each other and you can do cool stuff with that. But to do that, you need copies of the game, which is really irritating. They really should have made it one person has the game and then it does it over Bluetooth or something like that.
Yeah,
that was connection. An absolute huge letdown that you can't do it. I brought my nephew has a Switch and he came over and we thought we were going to do it and you can't. So yeah, that's irritating. The next game is also a Nintendo Switch game, which was also irritating. It's called The World Ends With You Final Remix. It is a game from the Nintendo DS era. And I was a bit surprised by this. Now, I didn't look into it going in because I usually like to go into games blind so I can not be prejudiced or whatever. And there's 2 ways to control this game. Entirely with your touchscreen or with motion controls. And right now, people are probably freaking out because it's a full, I think it's a $50 game and you only have motion controls or touchscreen. Now, the touchscreen is the better one out of those two. But it's not that good because, I mean, it is a touchscreen. But the Nintendo Switch isn't nice to hold as just a tablet because you need to take out the Joy-Cons because you're not going to be using them. And then if you haven't used a Nintendo Switch before, on the side of the Nintendo Switch, there are metal rails. And they are quite, not painful, but they're extremely uncomfortable to hold on to. So you're sitting there with like metal jutting into your palm while you're trying to use touch screen controls for a game you paid $50 for. It's ridiculous. And then the alternative is even worse. If you then put the Nintendo Switch in dock or you put it into tabletop mode, you can then use the Joy-Con as a pointer. And it's terrible. So if you've ever used a Wii or the Wii U, they have little sensor bars that pick up where the Wii controllers are, right? The wands or the remotes or whatever they're called. And that tracks it in real time. But on the Nintendo Switch, you don't have that. Inside of each Joy-Con, there's a lot of like motion sensors, and it has to depend on that entirely. And it's just not good. Most of the time, your cursor will just fly off to one side of the screen. And the developers knew this because the Y button, if you're using the right Joy-Con, is dedicated to recentering your cursor in the middle of the screen. And you're going to be using that a lot. So that's... It's not unplayable. It's just bad. It's outright bad. And I can't believe they even made it an option. And something this game added over previous versions is that you can now do co-op where the second person will use another Joy-Con. But then again, you have to use those pointer controls with the motion. And it's not good with that, which is a shame because, I mean, the game itself is great. Many people say it's the best game that was ever released on the NDS systems. And it's just completely gimped. I will say the game still looks great, even though it's only, you know, the Nintendo Switch screen isn't that great. It still looks good because it has like a comic art style, and the music is fantastic. I mean, it's so good. It's got this. It will make you nostalgic for the like mid to late 2000s, and you'll hear this music, and you're instantly connected to, you know, the time it came out. It's very of its time, but it's still very good. So yeah, that one's GIMP bites. It's still a good game, but it's GIMP bites controls.
Do you think that's something they could fix with an update?
Well, I don't see how. I mean, they could like improve the motion with the tracking with the pointer controls, but you can't do anything with the touchscreen. It's a problem with the Nintendo Switch.
Mm.
And I mean, they could have. I don't know, maybe, because if you see how the game played, it's very tied to that second screen on the NDS.
Mm.
And like, maybe they could make it so you control your character with the joystick and then the touchscreen controls. They could turn it into like a brawler, but it would kind of like betray what the game is. I think they can make it better, but I don't think they can make it great.
Okay.
Which is insane. Yeah, I think... I don't know, I was really looking forward to this because even though I didn't look into what the game is, I know a lot of people whose opinions I respect really loved this game when it was on the DS. So, yeah, maybe I'll need to speak to them and see if they're disappointed or not. But a lot of people are saying not really what they wanted from this.
Okay.
So, last game, not on the Nintendo Switch, at least not yet, is PTCGO, so Pokemon Trading Card Game Online. So anyone who follows Magic knows that Magic the Gathering on Arena recently went into open beta. That is the online client for the physical card game. So I thought I'd talk about this now just because people are talking about such games again. This came out in 2011, this software, the original version. And when it came out, it looked a bit dated then. And now in 2018, it looks even more dated. I can't believe they haven't upgraded the visuals. I know it's a small thing to talk about, but if you saw this on the App Store as somebody like who's just looking for a game and isn't necessarily looking for a Pokemon card game, you wouldn't click this. It looks so old. It looks like a Flash game. So that aside, the last time I played this game was probably 4 years ago in 2014 when I was still playing the card game. And they've updated very little. I mean, they added some attack animations for the cards. They added some, like, a rewards ladder. So if you, in the space of 20 days, if you play enough games, you can get a lot of really cool unlocks. But, yeah, they really haven't changed that much in 4 years. It's still, like, a lot of people say it has a lot going for it compared to Magic Online or Magic Arena. Like, if you buy a physical pack of booster cards, a physical booster pack in real life, inside of there will be a code card. You redeem that code card, you get a booster online. So there's a lot of incentive for the physical card players to get this.
Mm-hmm.
But, I mean, Brendan, you're talking about Arena the other day, and it sounds like Arena does a great job of bringing new people in. But I don't feel like this does it for Pokemon, because the tutorial is fine, kind of teaches you how to play the game. But then the decks they give you aren't good at all, because they come from many expansions ago and they're very underpowered.
Yeah.
So if you go on the random play with the theme decks, there is a mode where you can only use theme decks. So if you don't want to get bullied by like the meta decks, you can go play there. But you'll still get bullied because there's like two decks in rotate. There's two theme decks right now that are just fantastic, and you'll just get destroyed by them. So then if you want to do the meta, you need a hell of a lot of packs. Holy damn, you need a lot. Because I think the like best card in the format right now is like it's worth 30 packs online.
Oh wow.
Yeah, and if you buy a pack retail, I think a pack is like 10 US cents, so it's more than 10 rand. So you're going to be paying like 200, 300 rand to get the best card. Now granted, there are some decks that don't need the most expensive cards, but you will need to spend, I don't know, because like there's certain staple cards that need a lot of packs. You're going to need like 400 or 500 rands worth of packs.
Wow.
If you're buying retail. Now, I got lucky because I know a few local players who just gave me their code cards. But if you're just a random guy, you don't know that there's local TCG events. You won't have those cards. You maybe have to buy them online. And you're going to be paying 10 cents per code card, and you need like I think about 100 of them. So people argue with me about that, about exactly how much you need to get a meta deck. But yeah, that's getting into the meta and less about the game. I think it's less forgiving for new players. You can just pick it up and play it casually, but I think you'll get burnt out on it fast. It looks outdated, and there's a lot of quality of life things I really wish they'd implement. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting because I know some figures in the Magic community have dabbled with the Pokemon Online client and said it's fantastic. But, you know, things can always be better. Wait, so I'm going to wrap it up with that.
I just want to add something. Sorry, Clinton.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
sure.
It's you speaking about, like, the client looking dated and wishing they would improve, they'd add some quality of life improvements.
Yeah.
Like, that's something that the Hearthstone community has been asking for the better part of like 2 years. Dude, now, granted, dude, it's a lot newer than...
Dude, that's hilarious because Hearthstone looks like a modern piece of art compared to PTCGO. I want your live reaction, okay? Brendan, you have Slack open.
Yeah.
Okay,
Have it open. Hang on.
Okay.
I'm opening it now.
Okay, I'm going to send you like a live stream that was... It's on YouTube, so it will load very fast compared to Twitch, which just doesn't work in South Africa sometimes. I'm going to send you this, just like jump to the middle point of the stream and watch a little bit of what the client looks like, just to get a taste of it.
Okay, give me 2 seconds. So just to build off of what I said, I mean, a lot of people in Hearthstone will tell you that the issue is that nothing has changed since the release of the game. And that's why they say it looks dated, as it were, like when you load into the game, like the actual game board, once you're playing a game, everything is fine. But
yeah,
it's
the UI, the rest of it.
Yeah. Okay. I'm looking at this now. This looks like a web game from the 90s.
Exactly. I mean, look at the like wood grain texture. It's so bad.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, the one I sent you, he's playing on speed mode, which means, I mean, like the active cards, you can see there's jagged edges on the side.
Yeah.
Like, how did they think that was acceptable, even on, again, on fast settings and not beautiful settings? And this, I think, is like the time when the game looks the best, because you see those cards are like shining and everything.
Yeah.
Like, go to the start of the stream, like right at the beginning, you'll see kind of what the UI looks like, and it just doesn't look good. I mean, look, just scroll to the beginning of the screen, look at that diagram, that icon for the chest in the bottom of the screen.
Oh my gosh,
terrible. That, like, looks like something from the turn of the millennium, and here we are in 2018.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think that they could take a bit more care in, like, the presentation. Like,
yeah,
maybe they could learn something from Hearthstone. There's, like, forget the UI getting into the game and focus instead on the gameplay, because, I mean, that's what keeps people coming back to Hearthstone, is the game that you play, rather than the visuals, you know?
So, in real life, the game, the Pokemon game, is actually right now in a really good place. Like I said, the cheap decks are actually very strong. And Pokemon is good with this. When a card becomes, like, really popular, they sometimes print it as a promo so people can get it easier. Mm. So the Pokemon, well, I found out very fast that Pokemon is actually one of the best TCGs to be involved with in terms of getting good cards. It's much cheaper than their contemporaries, Magic and Yu-Gi-Oh, and getting cards is easier.
And Hearthstone. Don't forget Hearthstone.
Cards in Pokemon stay relevant for, like, 3 years or more.
Oh, that's awesome.
So, yeah. But yeah, this, it just looks ugly and dated, and it's hard to get people into this when it looks like that. But that's going to be everything. I think I've actually talked more than I wrote in the feature. I'll link to that below, and that's going to do it for this week, eh?
Sweet. That's us then for this week. Thanks so much, Clinton, for your time.
It's a pleasure.
And thank you, Robin.
Wonderful.
Awesome. You didn't leave us. That's great to know. But from all of us here at Hypertext, thank you so much for tuning in to the AfriCast, and we'll see you next week. We won't see you, Robin. Enjoy the UK. Bye!
We're sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.